I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
This Day in History class is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to This Day in History class, a show that tallies the wins and losses of everyday history. I'm Gabe Lousier, and in this episode, we're talking about the time when Oscar-winning actor Clint Eastwood decided to try his luck in the Wild West of local politics. The day was April 8th, 1986. Actor and director Clint Eastwood was elected mayor of Carmel, California. He won the office in a landslide victory, claiming 72.5% of the roughly 3,000 votes cast. The actor's star status certainly helped tip the odds in his favor, and it probably didn't hurt that Ronald Reagan, another cowboy actor, was the sitting president at the time. What's harder to understand, though, is why a successful actor like Clint Eastwood would want the job of mayor in the first place. He had resided in the small coastal town, officially known as Carmel by the Sea, since the early 1970s. With just 4,500 residents and 1 square mile of land, the quiet, wealthy hamlet was the perfect retreat for a celebrity looking to escape the Hollywood spotlight. But after 14 years of living there, Eastwood had discovered that not everything was as idyllic as it seemed. It turned out that the citizens of Carmel had long been divided over how to manage the town's development. The disagreement centered on a zoning law that had been approved by the city council way back in 1929. It resolved that the city of Carmel by the Sea was, quote, determined to be primarily, essentially, and predominantly a residential city, wherein business and commerce are subordinated to its residential character. The goal, then, was to essentially treat Carmel like it was a gated community. Outsiders could come and go as they pleased, but because the town had no tourist-friendly restaurants, shops, or activities, there was really no incentive for them to visit. The policy quickly proved controversial, and from that point on, there was a heated struggle between those who wished to preserve Carmel just the way it was, and those who wanted to grow its economy by welcoming new businesses and visitors. That battle was still being waged in the mid-1980s, but for the most part, the traditionalists had won out. There was hardly any public parking in Carmel, and the city didn't even have street signs. There were a handful of stores and sit-down restaurants on the main drag of Ocean Avenue, but because of city law, they weren't allowed to sell takeout, not even ice cream cones. The policy had been touted as a way to cut down on litter, but its true purpose was to ward off tourists in a bid to preserve the town's character. Restrictive zoning policies like that were the reason that Clint Eastwood felt compelled to run for mayor. In addition to his personal home, Eastwood owned a few small businesses in Carmel, including an English-style pub called the Hog's Breath Inn. He had long grappled with the city's strict rules, regulations, and taxes regarding building permits, and in the early 1980s, he decided to fight back. The tipping point came when he filed for permits to erect a small office building and retail complex next to his restaurant, only to have the plans immediately rejected by the city council. Eastwood was so frustrated with Carmel's hardline stance on development that he actually sued the city. He eventually won an out-of-court settlement, too, and was allowed to proceed with a modified version of his building proposal. In the wake of that victory, several residents reached out to Eastwood and encouraged him to consider running for mayor in the upcoming election. The actor was 55 years old at the time, and still riding high at the box office after more than 3 decades of movie making. He had no strong need or desire to break into politics, and certainly didn't have political ambitions beyond Carmel, but he did like the idea of fighting the city's bureaucracy on behalf of his neighbors. He hired a campaign manager and conducted opinion polls to see if people liked the idea of him running for office. The response was overwhelmingly positive. So on January 30th, 1986, Eastwood filed the necessary paperwork just a few hours before the deadline. He took a reserved approach to campaigning and made sure not to trade too much on his celebrity status. He didn't give any interviews with the national press and politely declined to give autographs at campaign events. He also did hardly any paid advertising, relying only on buttons and bumper stickers to help get the word out. Eastwood's opponent in the race was two-term mayor Charlotte Townsend. The candidates had drastically different ideas about how Carmel should be run, but Eastwood was careful not to attack Townsend's policies directly. Instead, he billed himself as a peacemaker, someone who would build bridges between business owners and the residential community. As a non-celebrity incumbent, Mayor Townsend had more to lose in the race, and was therefore a bit more confrontational in her campaigning. On one occasion, she suggested that Eastwood was too aloof to be an effective public official, pointing out that he had an unlisted phone number, whereas she took calls from residents every day. Eastwood wisely took the taunt in stride, responding only with a promise to get an answering machine if elected. Although the actor shunned the spotlight during the campaign, his run for mayor still drew national attention. So much so that on election day, 400 reporters turned up at Carmel's Community Center, where the voting was set to take place. And just to give some perspective, that means there was approximately one journalist for every 12 residents. With such a small population, it didn't take long to count the votes. That same evening, Clint Eastwood was declared Carmel's new mayor, having received 2,166 votes to Charlotte Townsend's 799. Eastwood was sworn in the following week, and as one of his first acts in office, he dissolved the planning board that had vetoed an earlier attempt to repeal the city's ban on ice cream cones. As a result, residents and visitors alike were now free to enjoy ice cream on the beach, and shopkeepers were even permitted to sell it to them. The rest of Eastwood's 2-year term proved equally productive. He oversaw construction projects to make Carmel more tourist-friendly, including the installation of more public toilets and stairways leading to the beach, as well as a dedicated public parking lot. To please the residential community, he expanded the local library with a children's annex and prevented a historic animal sanctuary, the Mission Ranch, from being bulldozed by condo developers. It was on that last point in particular that Carmel was grateful to have a millionaire mayor, because when city officials couldn't afford to buy back the property, Eastwood put up nearly $5 million to buy the ranch himself, and then donated 11 acres of it to be used as a nature preserve. The job of mayor kept Eastwood pretty busy, but he still found time during his tenure to direct two movies, Heartbreak Ridge and Bird, and to star in a third called The Deadpool, the fifth and final entry in the Dirty Harry series. Despite his accomplishments, there was a downside to Eastwood's run as mayor. Tourism spiked dramatically during his term, clogging the city streets and occasionally leading to fistfights over the limited number of parking spaces. Eastwood's more relaxed approach to zoning also allowed for fly-by-night businesses to pop up in town, including a tacky gift shop called Clintsville. The nearby Hyatt Regency Hotel also capitalized on Mayor Eastwood's stardom by launching an ad campaign with the slogan, "Go ahead, make my stay." Some Carmel residents thought the combination of Eastwood's celebrity and his pro-business policies was bad for the city, and while the actor likely still could have secured a second term, he decided not to seek re-election in 1988. After 2 years of navigating red tape and debating the minutiae of zoning laws, Eastwood had had enough. He returned to movie making full-time and allowed his political career to ride off into the sunset. I'm Gabe Lousier, and hopefully, you now know a little more about history today than you did yesterday. If you'd like to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TDIHCShow. And if you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to send them my way by writing to thisday@iheartmedia.com. Thanks to Casby Bias for producing the show, and thanks to you for listening. I'll see you back here again tomorrow for another day in history class.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.